It's a new and alarming report on this area's opioid crisis. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. And thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. And just ahead, why Northeast Florida actually leads the state now in opioid and heroin deaths and what's being done about it. You can get on the line now. Join the conversation. 549-2937. Then later, how to set yourself up for financial success in the new year. Plus, later on in the hour, we'll be talking about Russia, but not for the reason you might expect. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, the CDC is out with a new report, and it names fentanyl, a synthetic opioid, as the deadliest drug in America. The report says the rate of drug overdoses involving fentanyl nationwide has skyrocketed by 113% each year over the last 3 years. And here in Northeast Florida, our drug trends are mirroring those found in the CDC report. In fact, we now lead the state with a rate of synthetic opioid and heroin deaths, and it has almost tripled here since 2015. This is simply staggering, and we're going to spend the first part of the hour getting into this data as we welcome Dr. Christine Caulfield. She is CEO of LSF Health Systems. Dr. Caulfield, good morning.
Good morning.
Glad to be here. Thanks for being with us. And as we discuss the opioid epidemic, finding out that Northeast Florida leads the state in opioid deaths, what are your questions? What are your comments as we talk about what's being done to help patients struggling with opioid addiction? This is your time now to share your stories and get important, potentially life-saving information. So give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online and send your emails to First Coast Connect at WJCT.org. Tweets to at Melissa in Jax. And weigh in as well on our Facebook page. So, Dr. Caulfield, the CDC has really made it plain to the nation that fentanyl is the deadliest drug in this country with skyrocketing overdoses. This is an extremely potent opioid that is on the streets and that is unbelievably harmful. And what's even more upsetting to learn is that you are finding that Northeast Florida is actually leading the state now in the percentage of deaths related to opioids like fentanyl. Tell us what your data shows.
Yes, you're absolutely right, Melissa. And it's very alarming. Fentanyl is the fatal ingredient that is being laced. It's laced in our pills. It's being laced in heroin. It's being laced in cocaine. It's also being laced in meth. So folks that are addicted and taking these substances can't smell, can't taste. The addition of fentanyl and only 2 milligrams constitutes a fatal dose.
Only 2 milligrams.
2 milligrams. And it is absolutely deadly.
What is fentanyl?
Fentanyl is a synthetic opiate, and it is being added, if you will, to these various drugs that people are addicted to. Folks are reporting to us at LSF Health Systems that the high that they receive with this addition of fentanyl is off the charts. They want more and more. And the dangerous thing about it is that the withdrawal, once they have injected or ingested the drug of choice, is that the withdrawal is so painful and so dreadful that they will do anything to ameliorate those symptoms. And so they seek more and more of the drug of choice.
And if you're just tuning in, as we talk about the opioid epidemic, what are your questions and comments? Did you know that we lead the state in opioid deaths now here in Jacksonville? It's pretty alarming. And this is a public health emergency. We're going to be talking about solutions to the opioid crisis too. So give us a call, 549-2937. Why is Northeast Florida, Dr. Caulfield, struggling more than any other part of the state? I mean, you know, last year we interviewed the former Duval County medical examiner. She told us that at the morgue in downtown Jacksonville, they literally, this is gruesome to explain, but that they literally cannot keep up with the number of bodies that are coming into the morgue. overdose deaths. It's absolutely awful to contemplate this.
Yes, and unfortunately, that is true. It is really a crisis, and I don't know, frankly, of anyone that has not been touched in one way or another with having a loved one that's either struggling with a serious drug addiction or a loved one that has overdosed. So it truly is an epidemic, that one that we've never, ever seen, frankly, in the history of this country.
It's a public health emergency.
Most definitely. And I am extremely grateful to our legislators here in the state of Florida. They recognize this. They have allowed more funding to come in to combat this crisis, as well as the federal government. But honestly, the funding is just not keeping up with the demand.
Right. State and federal lawmakers have acted, but of course, those types of legislative responses tend to lag. They tend to be slow to meet the need, meet the issue, whether it's the opioid crisis or any other issue you care to name. And so tell us a little bit before we go to a number of callers. Tell us a little bit about LSF Health Systems and how you help patients struggling with addiction.
Okay. LSF Health Systems is the managing entity for the Northeast region. We span 23 counties, and we have 55 outstanding provider organizations in our network that are providing services, providing care for those that are struggling with mental health and or substance abuse disorders. So we reach a wide breadth of the state of Florida. In fact, we serve about a third of the state, and we are seeing such alarming rates of overdoses.
And how do you treat someone in the throes of heroin or fentanyl addiction, given that it is so highly addictive and coming off the drug is so difficult? How do you treat them?
It is very difficult for one to manage this. What we're finding, though, is great results utilizing certified recovery peer specialists as part of the treatment milieu. For example, we have one of our pilot programs, Project Save Lives, in St. Vincent's Hospital, and it will be expanding to other hospitals in the region. And once the individual that is in overdose status is revived, usually with Narcan, the first person they see is that certified peer specialist. And that certified recovery peer specialist is able to speak the language of the heart, if you will, talk about their journey through their own recovery. And we're finding very good results.
That's good. And Narcan is a medication that can stop someone from dying from an overdose. A lot of cities have experimented with just making it so widely available that you can get it to a patient in lots of different circumstances.
Absolutely. Loved ones out there, please go to your local pharmacy. Narcan is available, no charge.
And it's free.
It's free, and it's available for you to learn how to utilize it if you have a loved one that is in that situation.
I've heard, too, that if you try to apply Narcan to someone who seems to be stroking out, overdosing, even if it's not opioids that they're hurting from, it won't harm the patient. So nothing can be harmed by using Narcan on someone. Is that right?
That is absolutely accurate.
So you might save a life and you won't hurt the person either. So it's important people know that too.
Most definitely.
Okay. And lots of calls as we talk about the opioid crisis. We visit this topic regularly on this show because you might not have realized that Florida is one of the most affected states when it comes to opioid and heroin overdoses. And Jacksonville leads the state now in opioid and fentanyl and heroin overdoses. So we have a real public health crisis on our hands here in Jacksonville and Northeast Florida. Lots of calls. So many people have been affected by this crisis. It's 549-2937 to join us. Joe is in Murray Hill. Hi, Joe. Good morning to you. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I just want to make a comment that I think that although I'm very glad that now this is getting the attention and help that it deserves for this public health matter. But I think there's a lot of hypocrisy here in that drug use has been going on throughout the history of the United States. That's why the Homestead Act was first made to actually try to make narcotics illegal. Hasn't helped. Just the prohibition of alcohol hasn't helped. But the response in the 80s under Bush Sr. to the cocaine epidemic, at that point of crack cocaine in the 80s, was to simply build more prisons, which obviously is not the right answer. So now the fact that middle class and more wealthy people, particularly white people, are now suffering from overdose and addiction, it's now seen that, oh my gosh, there's an epidemic. This drug use and deaths from opiates have been going on. I've been a physician for over 20 years, and I've been taking care of people with this issue at county hospitals throughout the country. So I think that now it's been reframed because of what's seen as, okay, it's no longer the others. It's not just poor people and people of color that are actually struggling with this. It's now, quote, white people, and now all of a sudden it's getting the attention it needs. So there is some hypocrisy here, although I'm very glad that at least it's getting, I believe, the attention and the right care that it deserves. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. And, you know, Joe's absolutely right. This is a crisis that is now affecting all demographic groups in this country. And there is racism behind this, doctor. We didn't see the same level of concern and overwhelming public response to, say, the crack cocaine epidemic in the 80s and 90s that we're seeing now. There is an element of institutional racism behind this. And that's not to say we shouldn't respond aggressively, but what about his comments?
Right. And Joe, I appreciate your comments. And we certainly have heard these types of feedback. I think the difference in this situation is the addition of the deadly fentanyl. I think it is causing instant death, if you will. Certainly people have been dying from addictive disease for centuries. But I think the difference with this situation or this epidemic is the instant death, if you will. 14 to 16 people a day are dying in Florida. But I certainly appreciate your feedback. And I think certainly there is an element of truth to what you're sharing.
And let's be clear, you believe that the rates are so much higher here in Northeast Florida, in part because of generous prescribing through the years of legal opioids, and then some people get addicted, and then the next thing you know, they're out on the streets cruising for fentanyl, a street drug, because they've gotten so hooked.
Absolutely.
Is that the dynamic that we're seeing mostly, or is it more complicated than that?
Well, it really is. And when the pill mills were shut down and physicians had to report to the pharmacies, and there's a lot of oversight with pharmacies now to catch folks that are doctor shopping, if you will, there was a real squeeze. And legislatively, this past session, a doctor cannot prescribe more than three opioid pills, you know, per patient. So people that are addicted are desperately trying to get that same high, to get their fix, and unfortunately turning to heroin. And unfortunately, the heroin is being laced with fentanyl.
Victor is in Spring Glen. Hi, Victor. Good morning. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Question about, is there a correlation between the use of fentanyl, especially IV, and rising AIDS and HIV rates in Jacksonville? And if so, are there any talks about a clean needle exchange program or anything like that, like some other cities are exploring now? And I'll take my call. I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, that's interesting. AIDS and opioids.
Right. There certainly is concern of the rising rate of AIDS due to the needles that are being utilized. You know, for whatever reason, oftentimes needle exchange programs are controversial, and different organizations either embrace it or feel that that's just aiding and abetting to the addictive nature. So I'm not familiar with any new needle exchange programs in the city. I can certainly research that for you, but I do know that oftentimes it's a controversial subject.
Yeah. Willie in Murray Hill. Hello, Willie.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, ma'am. I'm trying to see, I had some people in my family die from overdose of crack cocaine and stuff. And I think I got a nephew. He was rumored that he's using that type of drug too. Is there something for young people on these drugs?
Yeah, sure.
Yes,
thanks,
Willie,
for the call too.
Absolutely. There is help, Willie. The good news is that addiction is a disease, and there's recovery on the horizon. There's hope. There is great treatment out there now to help people get off the drugs that they're addicted to and embrace a life of recovery. I would invite you to call LSF Health System's Access to Care line. It's free. It's 1-877-229-9098. We have clinicians on staff that answer those calls and can steer you to the closest treatment facility that can serve your family member.
Lots of calls, emails, and tweets about this region's and this country's opioid crisis. If you're just tuning in, new numbers show that Northeast Florida leads the state in the number of heroin and fentanyl overdoses. Lots of tweets coming into the show. Here's one from Chad. He's actually a candidate for office. We need to disclose that. He tweets the show, the Jacksonville City Council started an opioid task force 2 years ago with no positive results. We need to deploy Narcan all over the city until we get a handle on the opioid supply chains and addiction. More work, less talk. The city has started a pilot program to treat addicts, and they do have a task force. So the local government has responded to this crisis, but what about his comment? Do we need just Narcan on every corner, basically, to more comprehensively address those?
You know, I think that's an excellent idea, Chad. I think that Narcan should be in everybody's medicine cabinet, frankly. I do want to applaud the city council for their work and their funding of Project Save Lives to the tune of $1.5 million. They really have stepped up to the plate in addressing services to help those that are suffering. But certainly there's more that can be done throughout the state.
Jay tweets the show, some people need powerful pain relief to manage their chronic pain or following surgery. What alternatives to opioids should people be asking for? And so that's something that doesn't get discussed as often as the number of overdose deaths. People who do have legitimate pain issues, and they're having a hard time now getting the kind of painkillers that they used to get in the past. So what about pain patients, doctor?
You know, that's a very good point. And certainly those folks that have suffered accidents, automobile injuries, et cetera, often have lifelong pain issues. I think there's been a lot of good results with alternative health methods, health treatment, such as acupuncture, massage, and so on, chiropractic care. And I think there are practitioners out there that really laud those alternative methods to helping individuals with chronic pain. So I think it's certainly worth exploring some alternative ways to manage the pain.
It's 549-2937. Chuck is at the beaches. Hi, Chuck. And you've called the show before about your son, I believe. You're on the air.
Yes. I lost my son to fentanyl in 2016.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, thank you. The term was used earlier, overwhelming concern. So we had 70,000 people die from overdoses last year. So let's just say in the last 5 or 6 years, we've had somewhere between 500,000 and 1 million people die. Suppose that you had 70,000 people that died last year or caught polio, and everybody in America had to worry about this disease, polio. What do you think would be happening? It would surely be a whole lot more than is happening now. We've basically ignored this problem for the last 10 years. It started with OxyContin. And it started with the medical industry, and they put this in the system, and then it got in, and then kids and people got hooked on heroin who have to self-medicate because they have issues. And Melissa, you've talked earlier about you personally not having an addictive personality, and you explained how you came to that conclusion. Well, people do have addictive personalities. It is a disease. And so I have Noricon right here in my hand, and it's time for me to get some more. It's expired. I got to get some more. If you have a person in your family that has this disease, you better assume that this can happen. You need a life coach. You need to figure out how to keep your eyes on this person and have the medication and be ready, because if they are clean for 2 months and they have a little party, they'll get some fentanyl and it'll all be over. So I don't know what the answers are, but you've got Google, you need a life coach, you need to understand what's happening, and you need to figure out how to be ready, and you need to figure out how to help the person who has the disease, because they will relapse, and if they relapse, they only need to do it one time, and they will leave the planet. And you better have some Noricon around in case you're there when it happens. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Chuck, and I'm so sorry you lost your son. And he's right. Often when a patient, what I've learned about this doctor is that often when a patient has been clean for several months and then relapses and they take some of the drug again, that is incredibly dangerous. They can overdose very quickly in that instance. The famous actor Philip Seymour Hoffman apparently died that way. He was trying to get clean from this drug, and he went some period of time without taking it, then he relapsed and died immediately. But what is it about the chemistry of taking it after being off it for a while that leads to that tragic outcome?
You know, I think that with fentanyl, whether you've been clean a while or not, if you've got a deadly dose of it, it's going to take your life. And Chuck, I am so sorry for your loss, and I thank you for your comments. And I think that your comments really allude to the stigma that still exists for addiction in this country. Many people believe that it's a moral failing, that people are choosing to drink or drug. And you're absolutely right. It is a disease. It's a disease just like any other disease that deserves proper treatment and oftentimes involves relapse. And we can't penalize or criminalize an individual because they have a disease, and part of the disease cycle is oftentimes relapse. We've got to be there with services to help them through the recovery process.
Yeah. If for every 10 people out there, if 10 people are prescribed a painkiller, an opioid, one or two of them is at risk of becoming addicted, roughly speaking, just due to their brain chemistry.
That is absolutely right. Yeah. And their genetic history, their genetic predisposition. It's an inherited disease.
Emily is in Riverside right now. Hi, Emily. Good morning. Hi, Emily. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning. I just wanted to continue the comment about alternatives for pain management with medication. I am a physical therapist, and I work at St. Vincent's here in Riverside. And we would really love to see the doctors kind of include physical therapy, massage, other modalities, rather than heading for the prescription pad. And I'd also like to comment, I am a chronic pain patient myself, mm-hmm. and I use anti-inflammatories, but I use dance, exercise, stretching, ice, massage, and that's what keeps me living and mobile, rather than even considering medication as the first route for pain management.
Yeah.
And that's it. I'll take my...
Thanks, Emily, a physical therapist. And she's so right in that these types of treatments are so effective, but it's been so difficult to get insurance companies to cover them, which you would think now that we're at the crisis point we're at, that would change. You know, we had the CEO of Florida Blue on talking about this just a few months ago, Dr. Caulfield, and he said that they are piloting the types of coverage that Emily is talking about, but that they have to have more data to show that they're effective. Certainly, physical therapists like Emily would tell you, yeah, they are effective, but the big insurance giants are tentatively moving in this direction. I think a lot of people in your space would like them to move more aggressively.
Most definitely. And I really have to say hats off to Florida Blue for being a leader in considering this. And I think Pat Garrity is really forward thinking. So I'm hopeful and feel very positive that we're going to see a trend like this continue.
Here's one more tweet. Syringe exchange is illegal in Florida, except in Miami-Dade County, where a special pilot status was granted. Legislation was introduced that would have allowed for these pilot programs to be expanded in the state, but it did not pass. And so there are lots of tentacles to this problem. Legislative, criminal justice, everything that goes into treatment. Can you one more time explain where help is available, doctor, for people struggling or that have a loved one who is struggling with opiate addiction?
Absolutely. At LSF Health Systems, we have an access to care line that's manned 24/7 by clinicians. That number is 1-877-229-9098. And we get calls like this all the time. We know where available beds are. We know where the closest treatment facility is to help your loved one, and we welcome your calls.
Dr. Christine Caulfield, she's CEO of LSF Health Systems. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
And much more still ahead on the show later. If you're itching to travel overseas next year, I'll tell you why one travel blogger says Russia. Yes, Russia should be your destination. But up next, how to get back to good budget habits in 2019. We'll be right back. It's the time of year when most of us tend to overspend. Me too. This is a big problem at the holidays. And usually we think we can get back to good budget habits sometime in the new year. But financial experts say there's no better time than the holidays to plan your spending and saving for the next 12 months and beyond. With some thoughts on good and bad habits and how you can get into the good column, we welcome Mary Svoboda. She's the Chief Operating Officer and Lending Officer for Jack's Federal Credit Union. Good morning. Good to see you.
Good morning.
You know, it's amazing to think about the fact that the average American household has close to $10,000 in credit card debt, and a lot of it is debt that they accrue each holiday season, buying gifts for their kids and friends and loved ones, and then they spend the whole next year paying it off, which is crazy. But so many of us are doing that right now. And how do we even begin to get into this? How to tackle this, Mary?
What's really scary is they say about 26% of people are still paying off debts from prior holidays.
Yeah.
So it can mount. It can really start to mount.
It accrues. High interest credit card debt is killing the average American household.
Right, right.
And it can be so overwhelming for so many people to even begin to pay it off. Because even though the economy's been going strong, wages have not kept up.
Right.
Real wages aren't growing, so people keep getting into more and more debt. So unfortunately, we've got to make some painful choices in our household budget sometimes to get past this. It's easier said than done.
Well, for this holiday season, I'm imagining for many that some of the damage has been done.
Yeah.
But the idea is to really set a budget. I would really recommend people open up a Christmas club account or holiday club account and then deposit into that account each pay period.
Save the whole year for Christmas.
Right.
Or
and then
Hanukkah.
Stay to your budget and then stay to your budget. If you need to do gift exchanges, you know, where you each draw a name or you make a homemade gift, or what about giving the gift of an experience to someone? Say, you know, I'll go to the zoo with you, or, you know, I'm a big Elvis fan. I want my kids to just come watch an Elvis movie with me. Doesn't cost them anything, right?
That might not go over as well, but it is one way to start.
But experiences are something that people treasure and remember. So you can think about those things, homemade gifts, that sort of thing. But now that the new year is upon us, right? It's going to be here before we know it.
Yeah.
It's important to think about those financial resolutions. And so I have a couple of ideas for you.
Yes. Let's begin with Mary says, it's good to save more money, but it's even better to set up automatic savings.
Oh, absolutely. We used to call it payroll deduction back in the day, right? And you pay yourself first. You take a little bit off the top and build up an emergency savings account. That's goal one. Everyone should have at least $1,000. That pays for a deductible if you get in a car accident. Allows you to pay for an emergency room visit. You've got to have an emergency savings. That's job one. And then from there, keep savings. Once you have it coming out of your paycheck, maybe you don't miss it. Starts to build.
And once you get that $1,000 saved, ideally, people should have at least 3 to 6 months' salary saved, which not everyone has. But you say that's a must, too.
And, you know, it's such peace of mind. None of us have a guaranteed job. You know, and having that money set aside can really give you some peace of mind and security for your family.
Okay. Mary Svoboda also says, it's good to get out of debt, but it's even better to make a debt repayment plan to whittle down your credit cards. Now, tell me about the debt snowball, because I know that that is one successful way a lot of Americans have managed to get rid of their credit card debt.
I really think it's the best plan. So you write down on a piece of paper all of your debts, your balances, and then start with your small, figure out what your minimum payments are. You've got to make the minimum payment on every debt, obviously. But then how much extra do you have to throw toward debt? If you have $300, then start throwing that $300 toward the smallest balance that you have first. This will give you an easy win. Mm-hmm. So if you only owe $500 on a retail credit card, maybe in 2 months, that's gone. So you feel good. And then you take the money that you were paying on that small debt, plus the $300 extra that you had, and you apply it to the next smallest debt.
And the snowball gets bigger as you roll down.
Yes, absolutely.
I love that plan. Yes. I'm going to do that plan.
Yeah,
okay.
It's really an easy win, and it motivates people.
Mary says it's good to improve your credit score, even better to review your credit report every 4 months. I have to confess, I don't think I've really done that very well. Why is that important?
I think that you want to watch, first of all, for identity theft. You want to know if your score is improving. These things are, if you're doing the debt snowball, you'll be able to see the changes in your credit score as you pay down your debt, and that'll motivate you. So each of the credit reporting agencies will give you one free per year. So you can get three free per year without paying anything and keep on track.
Now, we talked about your holiday savings program already. Set up a special account at the beginning of each year to pay for the holidays. That's smart. And then last but not least, let's talk about the 50-20-30 rule.
Yes. So think about your take-home pay. 50% of your take-home pay should go toward your actual needs. Now, you have to be very realistic here. Having a cable bill is not a need, right? Having insurance and food is a need.
And a roof over your head.
Yes,
those
are needs. So you have to be able to separate the two. 50% towards your needs, 20% towards savings, and then 30% towards your wants.
Going out to eat, going to the movies, things like that.
Yes.
Okay, so 50% for essentials, 20% savings, 30% fun. If you can stick to that, you can probably be in much better financial shape in 2019.
Yes.
Great tips.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
And Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. Happy holidays as you brave the hordes of shoppers out there. Mary Svoboda, she's the Chief Operating Officer of Jack's Federal Credit Union. Still to come, music on 89.9 and why Russia should be on your travel list. We'll be right back.
Hands up. favorite holiday music is being played right now on the WJCT HD4 Pop-Up Holiday Channel. You can also listen to holiday music every night at midnight on 89.9. From WJCT to all of you, happy holidays.
Hi, I'm Andrew Wickman, host of Blues Horizon. The best in classic and modern blues is now on twice a week. Blues Horizon, Monday and Wednesday nights at 11, right here on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
Well, Russia has been in the news quite a lot over the last few years, mainly due to the allegations involving Russian attempts to influence our 2016 election and whether operatives with the Kremlin coordinated with the Trump campaign. Of course, Vladimir Putin is internationally regarded as a ruthless dictator who has allowed his people very little in the way of the type of Western-style freedoms we enjoy. That's all well known, but politics aside, Russia is a fascinating country with so much to see. Moscow alone draws more than 17 million tourists each year. So if you're curious about saying do svidaniya to the United States next year for a little bit and traveling to Russia, we have some tips from our own travel blogger, Judy Wells. And she just got back from Russia. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, good to see you. So did you go to Moscow?
I started in Moscow. And it was interesting. Every single person I encountered in Russia, friendly, welcoming, they love Americans, and they make it a point to make sure you know that they love the American people. As they say, it's our systems that don't get along.
Interesting. So great
and
people.
And Putin, he is their mystery man. No one ever knows where he is. I saw where his summer estate is, but he's rarely there unless he wants to play golf.
So he's regarded as this sort of mystical, mysterious figure by them. But it's interesting. So when you got there and you saw Moscow, what are some of the highlights if people are thinking of traveling there?
Well, it stunned me. You know, I grew up during the Cold War. And we thought of Moscow as being gray and dreary with bars and wires and, you know, just threatening. I was stunned by its beauty. Now, the Kremlin, which means fortress, and that was the name we all learned to, oh, my God, it's from the Kremlin. It's gorgeous. It's open. It's treed and landscaped. It's full of cathedrals and churches and beautiful buildings. And, yes, you have to go through a metal detector to get in. Don't we all have to go through those?
But the public can tour it.
Oh, the public can tour it. The Kremlin Armory is an amazing, amazing collection of all things wonderful in Russia. They have 8 of the Fabergé eggs. They have court ware from the beginning to the end. They have armories. They have gifts, all sorts of things. And they have spectacular cathedrals.
Right. The cathedrals, the architecture, the ballet in Russia, there's so much to see. So you began in the capital of Moscow, then you went to St. Petersburg, and that's
a very different place. In between, you go through the Moscow Canal, the Volga-Baltic Waterway, Lake Onega, Sevier River, Lake Ladoga, and the Neva River, and you visit towns and villages like Uglich, Yaroslavl, Kuzino, Kizi, and Mandrogi, which are smaller cities and kind of touristy villages, where they have recreated old periods, you know, centuries-old towns of wood and that sort of thing, like we have done with Williamsburg and places like that.
Okay.
And then you get to St. Petersburg, and it is everything you think it's going to be and more.
How so?
Well, you know, Peter the Great and his successors built one beautiful city, and the communists— Well, the Bolsheviks did their damage, but the communists seemed to realize what a draw this was and what a value it was to the country in tourism and outside dollars, which they very badly needed at the time. And it attracts people from all over the world, and the nearby palaces, the people themselves who lived in the areas, hid and buried and protected the treasures they had inside during the war years of, you know, damage and ravaging. And scavenging.
So St. Petersburg is gorgeous.
It is gorgeous.
And mainly due to the architecture.
The beautiful the buildings. Riches, I don't think any of us realize just how wealthy the Romanovs were. And the businessmen, because tremendous resources up farther north in Siberia, the forests, and the businessmen were very, they were artistic. They bought the most wonderful collections of Russian artists and new artists, European artists, that no one in Europe was touching then. The early works of every major impressionist are in the outbuilding of the Impressionist wing of the Heritage.
Let me ask you this. We tend to think of Russia as a poor country, oil dependent. Not so much anymore. We tend to think of Russia as not really known for its cuisine.
The food was excellent. The cuisine is fairly basic. A lot of vodka helps it goes dank.
So you drank the vodka. Okay.
We all did. But in St. Petersburg, for example, I found a wonderful family restaurant that Teplo. They have an outdoor playground for children. And it has the smoothest, velvety smooth stroganoff sauce and huge portions. Then there was a wonderful dress-up kind of restaurant, Czar, which has period decor, and a chicken Kiev was the best I've ever had.
So let me ask you this. What surprised you the most about Russia?
The beauty, the welcoming of the people, the fact that they like Americans, and they want you to know they like them, that it's their system that keeps them apart.
And do they feel that they are not free? You know, are they upset about the lack of press freedoms, the lack of political freedoms?
Of all the countries I've been in, they talked less about that than anybody else did. They were less forthcoming.
Huh.
But as one guide said, we used to have money and nothing to buy. Now we have everything to buy and no money.
But they don't fault Vladimir Putin for that.
They don't like him particularly, but they like the fact that he is standing up for Russia, in their opinion.
So nationalism is a big thing.
Nationalism is a big thing.
Interesting.
And of course, people who are older, who relied on the communist system to support them, they're much worse off. The younger people are better off. They see more opportunities to travel. Many of them know English, and they want to visit other countries, and they do. But you have to be a member of the party to be able to do this successfully.
Interesting, too. A very different world. But you can read more at Judy's website. It's wellsworld.net. More about island hopping up on the Golden Isles there, too, by the way, which would be a good thing to do at the holidays.
It's perfect time. The bugs are down.
Yeah.
Lights are up.
Lots more on the website. Thanks, Judy. We'll be right back.
Comcast Business, providing a gig speed network that gets business done. Comcast Business, beyond fast. More at ComcastBusiness.com.
Sweet Pete's, your sweet destination for creating memories and to celebrate the holidays. Sweet Pete's selection of treats, candy canes, classes, and gifts make for an unforgettable holiday. Details online at SweetPete'sCandy.com.
On the next Fresh Air, Iraq's cruel and corrupt campaign of revenge. We talk with Ben Taub of The New Yorker. He reports that now that ISIS has been driven out of most of Iraq, hundreds of thousands of Iraqis, including women and children, are being detained, tortured, killed, or cast out of society suspected of associating with ISIS. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
A precious resource attracts an Ivy League institution. as our climate continues to change, water is becoming a very valuable substance.
Harvard's endowment fund invests in land in drought-parched California. The appeal? Water rights. That's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Patti Smith, singer, songwriter, and high priestess of punk poetry. Her art spans decades and still packs a punch. Smith is back with a retrospective detailing the loves and losses that made her who she is. Patti Smith, next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, a quick thank you to the First Coast. We recently had a 24-hour pledge drive where we decided we were going to raise $24,000. That's $1,000 an hour. Guess what, First Coast? Thanks to you, we did it. Station manager David Luckin is here to, first of all, thank our listeners for that. Hey, good morning.
That's exactly right. We want to thank everyone who called us up. We went a little over 24. It was more like 36, but we did it
with
your help.
We'll take it.
And the best part was an anonymous donor matched 20,000 of that. So we raised 24, matched but 20. So it was an excellent holiday gift.
It's the season of giving.
In the community,
and for this nonprofit, WJCT Radio and Television, we couldn't be more grateful for your giving spirit, keeping public media going strong into 2019, because we actually have a lot going on here and a lot planned for the next year and some updates that we want to let people know about.
Well, I was going to let people know we do have the HD4 pop-up holiday channel, which is really fun. Over 800 holiday songs, Christmas, Hanukkah, Happy New Year's, and chill out, jazz, classical, Gregorian chants, you name it, country. We've got about every Christmas song ever recorded. And now we added that last Monday to our main channel. So at midnight every night, if you don't have HD, you can tune in and fall asleep to Crosby and Louis Armstrong and Dean Martin and all those great people. Plus a lot of chill out and a lot of new music in there too.
Very nice. So to get the holiday pop-up channel, here's what you do. If you have an HD radio in your home or in your office, just go to 89.9 and then click over to our HD4. Just click the knob over a few clicks. If you're in your car and you have an HD radio,
it pops up.
And it will pop up, and you just need to search through our HD channels. And HD4 is a special pop-up holiday channel that we've created just for the season.
It'll go away about January 1st or 2nd. And it's a great service. So we also have Relax, of course, on HD3, which is kind of the music of your life, everything for the last 75 years of music, and classical music on HD2 always. So if you like classical, it's always there. You can always take a break from the news because it's still us and switch to one of our other channels.
That's right.
And the other thing we were going to talk about is we're going to take a little break. We'll go dark for a few days after Christmas until New Year's with First Coast Connect. But we're going to come back bigger and better than ever. We've got some interesting things planned with, we won't give any of it away. Just say tune in.
Yes.
Because we're going to come back with a new year and a fresh new start. And I think you're going to like it.
Yeah, a lot happening for January. So we are really excited about another year here at 89.9, both for news and talk and music. The music is so amazing. If you listen to our After Hours block of music hosts and music shows, you know that we're playing music that you can hear nowhere else on the radio anywhere in this community. And that is due to you, David Luckin, the magic man.
No, it's due to the listeners who come to us. We thank everyone for listening. We thank everyone for helping us out with the pledge drive. It really made it happen for us. And we thought maybe we'd just stop talking here and give you a little holiday music, give you a taste of what's on HD4 and 89.9 after midnights right through Christmas. So sit back and enjoy. Melissa, thanks for making the time for me to pop in.
Thanks, David. Thanks for the music, too. And that is our show. 1A is up next. This program will rebroadcast tonight at 8 p.m. if you missed anything this morning. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Get into that holiday swing and enjoy a little music. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.